Welcome to Hello Universe, a podcast about spirituality in our everyday lives. We're your co-hosts, Kylie and Eva. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We're so happy to have you.
Hey, thanks for coming back for another episode.
I don't know. Okay, Kylie and I are still figuring out how to record these podcasts. If you can't talk, yeah. You can just start from there.
You can't shut us up when we're talking, but you hit record and we're like, wait, who goes first?
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually surprisingly tired, which is strange because, as you know, I just finished a 1-day silent meditation retreat. And usually I feel like really rejuvenated after these things, but I felt so tired yesterday when I was done. And today, and I felt like I could have slept a gazillion hours, and I woke up today also really tired. I don't really know what that's about.
What was the meditation? What was the experience like? Because you've done these before, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really actually love doing a 1-day retreat. So if anyone's interested in meditation, I highly recommend it. Like, this is something that if you live in like a relatively big city, they probably have them at yoga studios or meditation centers where you kind of start the day at like maybe 8 or 9 and you go until 5 or 6 and you're just sitting there for with a group of other meditators, which I also think is so cool, in silence without your phone, no writing, no talking, no distractions, just you and your mind.
That going sounds inward. Both amazing and like pure hell.
I think that's a really good way to describe it. That's exactly what the experience is. I just remember like I was walking up to the door and I felt so freaking grateful to be there. I put my hand on the handle of the door and I had this flash of insight being like, I have no idea what's going to happen today because I never do. So I've done this for long enough to know that it's pointless to have expectations because whatever you think it's going to be, it's going to be the opposite. So if you think it's going to be like really relaxing or whatever, it's going to be intense. And if you feel like it's going to be difficult and intense, it turns out to be like really blissful. Just because the mind is so fickle and you never really know. So I went in there just being like, I have no expectations, but I'm happy to be here because it feels like so nourishing to have a reprieve from life sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like I'm so happy not to be on my cell phone. I don't have to be anywhere. I don't have to do anything. I get to just sit here for a day. That really is like a privilege.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there, not to ask you to like overshare, but was there anything that came up for you, Eva, that made you feel, I don't know, was there a way in which it was intense and that you think that has to do with why you're tired, or are you still sort of sitting with what that tiredness might be telling you?
Yeah, like when I think about it now, I think the reason I'm tired is because like observing your own thoughts and actively trying not to believe everything that you think is really freaking tiring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like essentially the act of meditation is about a constant refocus. It's like your mind strays and you come back to your breath. Your mind strays, you come back to your breath. And so you literally are doing that a couple thousand times throughout the course of the day. So you're retraining your brain. And whenever, you know, I run a meditation course here in Phoenix and or class, and that's what I tell people, it's that we're at the training ground for our mind. I feel like we're warriors or ninjas in a way. And we're coming here to build this capacity and build this muscle in our brain to come back and refocus over and over and over and over and over again. So I, you know, sometimes when I do like longer 10-day meditation retreats, I forget the first day is actually the hardest because you're coming out of like the habit pattern of your mind, which is that you're probably thinking about work and your family and whatever, your friends and all these things you have to do, and you're in reaction mode. So the first day is the hardest because you're sort of like washing yourself clean of that. And so I feel like that was what yesterday was. 1 day is really great because like it helps me refocus on my meditation practice, but it's also like, yeah, that day can be really difficult.
You basically did the hardest day and then you came back to the rest of the world. Like you didn't get the perk, full possible perk of that one day.
Totally, exactly. Yeah. But that isn't to say that I didn't have ups and downs. Though that's exactly what it was. And again, this is like such a wonderful lesson for meditation, is that like nothing is that serious, because throughout the day I had such beautiful highs and such amazing insight, and I felt such love and so connected. And then I also had these lows of feeling like judgment and noticing like my own anxiety and all these things. And it's like high and low and high and low. And part of the practice, I think, is realizing that you don't have to take any of it seriously, because it all just comes and goes. It doesn't really mean that much. It's just, that's just the pattern of your mind, but that's not like who you are.
I love that. It's funny. I've had a few moments the past few weeks in, like, you reach this place where you can observe, occasionally you can observe the chatter of your mind instead of be consumed by it. But I've had these moments recently where I am observing the chatter and I'm like, there's a bunch of fucking mad women up there. Like, just shush. Like everybody just shush.
Oh, completely.
Like, sometimes I think like it's almost kind of parallel to what you're saying about the first day being the hardest. Like, sometimes when you're in that space of like seeing the patterns, but not yet, you know, mastering the new skill set or whatever. Yeah. It feels, well, exhausting, actually, because you can see it, but you know, I can't always often do anything. I'm still struggling sometimes to do something with the knowledge, other than just like, oh, that's thinking. I'm not that thinking, and that's powerful. But also, oh my God, just stop already.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Kylie, I think that's such a good point, because I think people ask me that sometimes, is that like, they say that the observation isn't enough. Like, they're like, I've observed it, now what?
Yes.
Right. And I do think that it's about observing and not identifying with it. That's actually, I think, a huge difference. Because if it's still bugging us, if these voices are still like seem really loud and exhausting, it's probably because some part of us is still identifying with them.
I think some part of it is identifying with them. And I think that, because I have had moments where those voices were quiet and I was able to be. And so I am attached to that outcome. So then I am impatient with myself and not, quite frankly, not very compassionate with myself, because I've had a few moments where I felt really kind of transcendent and connected. And so then I'm mad at the part of me who is super mortal and has a lot to worry about. So I think that part of the answer is like just sending a lot of love to the mad women in the attic.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. It's an ongoing practice.
Yeah. Speaking of mad women, actually, this is a great reference, because mad women in the attic is also something that comes up in this episode.
Oh yes. Look at that segue again. Just totally on
flow,
purpose,
guys. It all just comes. This is a super nerdy reference to Jane Eyre, and that my crazier parts of my brain I think of as a certain character from Jane Eyre, which you will discover in this episode. But even more excitingly than my literary metaphors for life, the guest this week is, she's just the best. You guys are going to love this episode.
Yeah, she's so much fun. And part of me wishes we were releasing the video aspect of it, because her facial expressions and her gestures are just so funny and pleasant. And I feel like I could watch her talk all day.
Which I believe she now has a brand new YouTube project that is launched, which we will link you to.
Yes.
So you too can go watch her great facial features while she talks. In addition to this new YouTube project with her partner that is about sort of theology and parenting and relationships and. Zaylee Kane is a very dear old friend of mine. She fancies herself a folk epidemiologist. She's a writer, an artist, a stand-up comedian, a hypnotherapist who's the proprietor of That's What She Shed, and just generally is an incredibly outspoken and really authentic human being that I know you're all going to love
getting a chance to know better. Hi, Zaylee.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us today.
Oh my gosh, this is my favorite thing to be doing right now.
So the question that we always start with, so we'll throw this your way, is can be as big or as small as you want to take it, but what does spirituality mean for you and how do you experience it in your everyday life?
Okay, first of all, thank you for asking me that. And I've been waiting for my parents to ask me that for 38 years. It's so funny because the answer to that question has changed a lot in my life. And what I just realized as those words were coming out of your mouth, because you told me you were going to ask me that. And so I was like, oh, I think I've, you know, got a clip or whatever. But as those words were going in my ears, my body was like, take a breath and ask yourself that question now, you know, instead of the sound bite that you had prepared. And it was like, oh, that act is for me what spirituality is, you know, is like staying here and being like, what's my truth right now? And I also think it is what I was going to say or thought I was going to say, which is that I think it's kind of just having the maturity to admit that there's something more than mechanical about existence, that there is, about us specifically, there is something that rises and falls in terms of like our gratitude to be here. And as it's doing that, it's teaching us kind of how to take care of a part of ourselves, you know, just the way we take care of our appetites, our other appetites. So we have this spiritual appetite. And so yeah, I think it's maybe spirituality for me is just learning the art or the dance of like keeping gratitude for my body, for where I am and who I am, and you know, and understanding that it's my responsibility.
Yeah.
And also my joy.
Like, as you were saying that, I was completely captivated by what you're saying. And then like the sun came through my window in the background and it got like, it's like just like a gloomy, gloomy, sad day here in Phoenix, which never happens. And all of a sudden the sun just like came looming all through my apartment. I was like, wow, this is so beautiful. So that's how I feel about your answer.
Well, then check this out. You're not going to believe it, but the same thing is happening in Texas right now.
Oh, wow.
We had a crazy foggy morning and it is just starting, the leaves are starting to get a little gold right now. So it makes sense.
It is still gloomy AF here in Boston, guys. But that's okay because I took my son for a neighborhood walk in the gloomy, rainy day and it was like super, super, super beautiful and delightful and its own spiritual experience. So we're cool. Mm-hmm. We're cool with the rain.
Just how sweaters call for pets. You know, when sweaters need some love, they send the clouds.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, good. Yeah, you're right. Thank God for clouds or else I'd never be able to put on my awesome sweaters.
And what you guys are missing if you don't have the video is that there's like 8 sweaters being worn between Zaylee and Eva.
Yeah, but mostly on Zaylee. Zaylee's got like layers and
with
layers.
Pride. Yeah, with pride.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love so much about your answer, but I think also this notion that spirituality is a responsibility and a joy, that there's something really potent there and that like living in the tension of both of those simultaneously and not getting pulled too far in one direction or just abandoning the whole thing. So I guess I'm a little curious, how do you maintain a sense of like honoring and the response, what you phrase as a responsibility, and also like having that responsibility be joyful?
Well, I feel like it's easy for me because I've learned to be honest with myself about I'm still learning to be honest with myself about my desires, but that's what hypnosis has really taught me, because my childhood experience taught me many things, but it didn't prioritize me understanding my original desires, you know, which I think is the case for like pretty much everyone our age, you know. And what was the original question? I'm sorry, I just totally got lost in my childhood.
It's
that right there, full stop, is what's happening to all of us all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why can't you be present? Sorry, I got lost in my childhood.
back on.
Let's actually go with this detour, because that was my other question that I was torn between asking you, is like, how does your childhood upbringing inform your notion of spirituality?
Oh, right. Well, okay. You originally asked me, thank you, brain. You originally asked me how I sort of reconcile this, like, oh, it's a responsibility, but it's also the joy source, right? And so what I'm saying is, I have discovered that, or I have remembered that my nature is that I take joy in taking responsibility. You know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be helpful. We had this like shack in my backyard. It was like the one messy thing, you know, that was allowed outside of the house. We had this shack that we called the Cool Club. And it was like me and my older brother and the girl across the street and the neighbor's cat, you know. And I was like, let's have meetings, you know, I'm going to take notes.
Yep, I had one of those.
And I just love taking notes, and I love feeling like I'm growing and getting better and contributing, you know? So when I notice that I'm being a bummer to myself or anyone else, it used to really embarrass me, because my original role was like of mediator, peacekeeper, you know? But now... and the middle child, yeah. The high-functioning middle child. Yeah. But in any case, you know, I just remind myself of that. And I'm like, for me, I feel like once I accepted that, like, my soul is good, you know, the whole I am love thing, like I can relax, because it's not going to work out that, oh, if I relax, then I will like become a monster. Once that changed for me, like, I did chill out, and that mellowness is what I needed to have a sense of humor about my shadow self, you know, the unconscious choices. And so now I just tell myself, okay, my soul is good. So like everything's a victory lap. Like I used to strive to be perfect, or I used to strive to be better than everyone else. Now I'm just like letting myself get off on being like, yo, I apologized and I meant it, you know, like, instead of being right all the time.
Yeah. Or like I fucked up.
Right. I caught myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just as fun, because even when I'm catching myself now, like the image that I used to unconsciously hold of like my naughty self was so like crude and uncompassionate, you know? And now what I imagine is it's just like mischievous little nymph me, like flashing, you know, like pranking everybody. And I don't need to throw her in jail, you know? I just slap her ass and go, get out of here.
Yeah. So is that what you mean by spirituality being responsibility? I think this is so interesting. I've never heard anyone really put it that way before. Is it, you mean responsible as in essentially taking care of yourself, showing up?
Yeah. And understanding your power, like understanding the power of what you pay attention to. And that once you notice something, you can edit it.
Right.
Like, but yeah, that it's in our power to evolve. Like that's what we're always saying. And I feel like people just, it's not in their bodies, you know, they're like, yeah, but they're still thinking about we're doomed because we bit the apple. And it's like, nerds, read the book.
Oh, I love that so much. I also love the like personification of your shadow self and like the transition of that. My shadow self is full on Bertha Mason. I know you will appreciate Bertha Mason from from Jane Eyre.
Oh, I was gonna say, if this is a character name, don't even bother, because I delete those files immediately.
Oh, that
and
is
I
impressive.
Always did. No, even back in the day, like, and this is when I realized, you know, after, because I did my master's in literature, and I was the student where like every paper I got all the ideas, you know, and that's the folk epidemiology thing. But the names I just delete. Just can't remember. I can't.
That's
do the
how I am with
chit-chat.
History. Like I got the big picture. I got the arc. But if you want a date or like someone's name, it's gone. But
right.
But characters. Yeah. No. They're like the crazy frothing. I'm gonna burn the fucking house down. She's my.
Oh, friend. You've got. Oh, oh in really? The attic. Okay,
yeah.
That's her.
Yeah.
up in the attic there.
Oh, you mean like a sabotager?
Well, sorry, not to make this about me because I'm much more interested in asking.
No, but I want to know about everyone's shadow self. Let's talk about it. But,
yeah, no, we should all say ours.
Yeah. So, yeah, my shadow self is definitely, so if you read Jane Eyre, spoiler, there's a crazy lady in the attic and, like for a while, it seems like the house is broken or is haunted rather, because like someone keeps trying to burn the house down, or like this crazy lady with like unkempt hair and like in a mangy nightgown, like keeps showing up in Jane Eyre's room. It turns out that it's the love interest's wife who he's hidden away in the attic. What's interesting is, and eventually she does actually burn the house down. But there's a beautiful book written called Wide Sargasso Sea that is actually like telling her backstory, which is that like, she just has a whole bunch of trauma and that's why she wants to burn the house down. And so anyway, it's interesting because, I'm in a moment of transition. So I think that's why I particularly resonated with what Zadie was saying about shifting how she imagines her shadow self, where for a long time I have been really like afraid of the woman in the attic, right? Like afraid of feeling my own rage, afraid of like acknowledging that like there's something kind of snarling and I don't know, angry up there. And I think I'm in a process of shifting to seeing her as the Wide Sargasso Sea Bertha Mason, who is like, there's a reason, like she has something to say and she has a reason for wanting to burn the house down, and maybe the house sucks and you should burn it down.
It's trapping you.
Yeah.
So you love loving her. You can give her love. Yeah.
Oh my God. But that's such a huge step though. If you can actually begin to welcome your shadow self and be compassionate, I think that's like, that's you doing the work right there. Okay. So shadow selves, by the way, for people who are listening, who are like, what the fuck are you talking about? And to my understanding, you guys can like correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like the darker side of you, maybe all the quote unquote things that you don't like about yourself that show up when you're reacting to something, because most oftentimes I think my shadow self is reacting to fear or some type of negativity. And I have a whole like character of who my shadow self is and I know her very well. She's critical as fuck. She's really controlling. She's even kind of like, she's mean and she's frantic and frenetic and just trying to like, she's like flailing her arms kind of and treading water. And when I say my shadow self shows up, I mean like it shows up with other people, probably most notably my partner or the people who are like the super closest to me, because what I have come to realize is the reason that happens is because that's actually how I treat myself. And I'm holding myself up to these ridiculous high expectations. And Kylie knows I'm a Capricorn. So like, yeah, I just, you know, like to have everything done and in order and all these things. And then I'm like, well, if I'm not like getting shit done, I look at someone else, like the closest person to me, the innocent bystander. I'm like, well, you're not getting shit done either. And I like try and control all of them. But of course, it's just it's fear. It's all because I'm scared.
Yeah. And the more you identify with someone, the bigger a bitch you are to them. Cause like,
totally,
you're just leaking out like your inner voice, you know, it's just going there first. Yeah. It's hard to face because you have to face that you've hurt people. I mean, it's sad.
I think it's also the parts of ourselves that we want to abandon. So like for me, I like, or had to, right? And like, so for me, like I'm very uncomfortable with the notion of being angry for a whole host of reasons. And I don't want to really, I have a lot of resistance to like looking at this rage and blah, blah, blah. And which is to say that like, people are like, you're not an angry person. And it's not like, I don't have road rage. Well, because I have suppressed that shit. So part of like, for me, this notion of like exploring what is a shadow self and what does it mean is like, what are the parts of myself that I have completely orphaned and abandoned? And like, can I at least acknowledge that they exist and then start like letting them into the party?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that I just feel a lot of shame about my shadow self. And so, but acknowledging why she's there is because she's there to protect me, because she's just a little child throwing a temper tantrum, I think really helps me love her more, really, and just not have to like pretend that that she doesn't exist and like hide her away in a closet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are like these moments, right, where we lose consciousness, like literally we're not making conscious decisions. Like you said, we are reacting. And so I think the huge key to recognizing and accepting and beginning to be charmed by your shadow self, and then to charm your shadow self back, the key is understanding that like, that doesn't make you a bad person. Consciousness shifts. Our state of consciousness shifts. It wants to shift. It needs to shift. These are our mechanisms of operation. And so, you know, just being willing to understand them instead of fixating habitually on the shame we inherited from our parents who weren't adequately comforted, you know, when they were going through absences of consciousness, you know, you can trace this back really far. But yeah, just spreading the word that like nobody's conscious all the time. You know, we're in and out of trance. We're in and out of awareness. We're all learning how to like operate the spotlight of our attention, you know? That's what's got me to the point where I can actually admit to myself, like I can see, oh, I was being a bitch there, you know, like, or I was being sulky. I was being hypocritical, you know, I was being a know-it-all, like all these things that come out when I'm triggered by the body that casts the shadow, which is, you know, my childhood and my ancestral wounds and the inadequacies of my culture, these things that like I couldn't control. No one can, and everybody's got it, you know? Yeah. So that's the word, I think, is everybody's got it. Everybody's got something to take care of, you know? There are talents that we have to take care of, and there are like tendernesses that we have to take care of. And there are wounds. So that's what we do with our attention first. And then after that, sure, make some money, you know, or do it both at the same time if you can.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That was beautiful.
Buy yourself a nice bathtub. That's
PDLR. Well, do you feel like that's what you're doing? Because one thing that I just have to like talk about is the fact that you are a jack of all trades, and I'm just so fascinated by the work that you do and how it's all, I mean, like, you know, if it's layered together, I know that you're a writer, you're also a hypnotherapist and a comedian, like all of these things that are, not only do I think sounds so interesting, but I have a lot of respect for. So yeah, can you tell us just a little bit about that? Maybe segueing into like some of the work that you do and how do you, and I don't know, I think what's so interesting is like, do you feel like doing this work is also healing for you?
Yeah, 100%. I feel that in terms of the work, the writing that I publish on Instagram, which is really where I decided to make my platform, and I went through a few different things, you know, trying to do a WordPress or a Tumblr or whatever, you know, a lot of failed starts with finding my flow state. And then I just decided this is a good, democratic, beautiful place where I like the engagement I'm getting, and I'm going to try to put my roots down here and really meet some people and just be transparent about the work that I'm doing to recover, you know, from soul loss, as some would put it, you know, or disembodiment, and to find my way back to myself, and just understanding that that's like a process. So my goal is really, yeah, I'm going to have a practice for myself that involves doing self-hypnosis every day, and then sharing my takeaway when, you know, I trust myself to understand like what is it that I can speak on clearly right now, you know, because it's a tricky medium. And I think this is, there's, you know, the shadow too, the platform, the social platforms, at least as a practitioner, is that people need to hear different things at different times, you know, so putting a meme out, right, that's like, dump him or whatever, you know, like, that's helpful for some, and for some that's confusing, although they may not recognize it because it's not the moment to dump him for them, you know? So, I try to have a method where it really is just me kind of saying what I need to say to myself and as unselfconsciously and as honestly as I can. And yeah, and then to encourage people to be doing the same, like their own version of that. So it has been confusing for me to be a multi-passionate, which is a word Marie Forleo gave me, bless her soul. But it's a big relief to understand that, no, that's a thing, and that doesn't have to freak me out. I don't have to get wrapped around some story about myself, about being like special or weird, because this is a millennial thing, you know? This is just like this kind of spread in terms of like neurodiversity is, I think, responding to the place where we're at environmentally. We're seeing a lot of crossover in intelligence, and we're seeing a lot of like hyper-specialization in what we call like autism, the autism spectrum, you know? So it's like our nervous systems are experimenting to, you know, see how we can like shake the soda machine here, you know, and like get on to the next, or get through what I think is like a transition point ecologically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I'm just more curious. You said it does make you, what did you say? It makes you stressed? Is that what you said, to be multi-passionate?
Oh, it originally made me stressed. Yeah, it stressed me out. Yeah, because I was like, I felt the message I got from the very beginning, and I'm sure it's the same with you, is like, pick a lane, you know? Like, choose your icon off this menu of icons and then reproduce it.
Actually, someone just sent me a message the other day being like, I don't know how people choose doing one thing. And I'm like, you don't gotta choose doing one thing. Like, luckily, you're in a great time for being like, if you were born 100 years earlier, then you might be fucked. But but now it's like, it's, I think it's a really beautiful thing that you can honor all these different gifts that you have.
Thank you. Yeah. That's the joy, right? Of being alive, I think. And that's something that's being kind of lost right now, is like, we have these talents and everybody wants to see each other's talents. Like, we love that, you know? So, but people get stuck in their heads, you know, about I'm not allowed to, or I have to pick one, or before I can pursue this, first I have to prove something to my dad, you know? Those kind of stories. And I had a big mental block with presenting myself as a professional for a few different reasons, which in retrospect, it was all good. Timing was always on my side. But one thing I got stuck on was like, what the fuck do I put on a business card? You know, like, I only have so many characters in these bios. How do I explain myself? Because I'm trying to offer, I'm just, this is my healing, you know, is making music and writing poems and like taking portraits and writing comedy, you know, like I'm reshaping the story, you know, so that I can like let it go and literally develop a new sense of humor that works for me, that works for my body. So it's very weird to just be like, you know, take me seriously as a professional and as a, you know, a well-intentioned healer, but also like, I'm a comedian and here are some crude jokes, you know. Like, I had huge conflict about that, not to mention my name, you know, because I took a pen name when I began writing about my private life, and then it became a stage name, and then it became how people knew me. And
you mean Liza?
Yeah, so Eliza is my given name, and I love it, you know, and I'm an Eliza if there ever was one, but but a lot of people don't know, but it's a very Mormon name.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, and I was named after a specific Mormon figure who was a poet and a leader in the church, really, before women kind of got written out of authority officially. And it also, it just, to me, that name was really anchored to being the daughter of this Mormon couple, you know? And I was really, really, really arrested in daughter mode. And then I would throw these tantrums, you know, with my, in my relationship with my parents. And I felt I couldn't write, I couldn't tell my story because it would embarrass them. So that's how I got into taking Zaylee. And so now it's like, yeah, which one do I put? You know, there are all these questions with like, how do I present my diversity? You know, how can I be authentic in this world where we offer ourselves online, because put me in a room with anyone and I'll know which part of myself to show first, you know, and establish trust with good intentions, you know, with my good heart. But yeah, I finally was just like, you know what? I can edit these things all the time. If I, you know, if I'm meditating and I get the message someday, that's like, you know, say you're a poet today, then I'll edit that. And then maybe somebody, you know, maybe that helps somebody understand who I am on that day. Maybe it's just keeping myself like flexible for my own sake. But yeah, I'm just trying to blast past all of that and be like, yeah, we're allowed to do this, you know?
I love it. I love it so much. I mean, that's one of the things I've always, you know, one of the things I think even when we were babies, AKA in college, is like, I think you are someone who, there is clearly a strong pull inside of you to like break some shit down. It's like, this isn't serving me. Bye. and I know that like that can be, cause I mean, I have that too. And so like, I know that's a pain, like if that's not an easy process always, but man, it is so great on the other side. But one of the questions that I wanted to ask actually is going back to talking about your childhood is, you know, having grown up in a very traditional religious tradition. I mean, I'm just generally curious about sort of your evolution. But in particular, I'm wondering, what was your experience of spirituality in that environment? Did you feel connected? Did it feel really suffocating? Was it both simultaneously? Because like religion and spirituality are intertwined and also completely separate. So I guess I'm just curious what that looked like for you.
Yeah. So, well, what I've realized through my own self-hypnosis practice is that my mind has one story about that and my body has another. So my mind would tell you that I was really enthusiastically Mormon until like puberty. And I felt the spirit to the point where I would cry. I love to engage in church, you know, because it's very interactive. And the children are encouraged to like testify and things like that. And that it was overall really positive. And then I had kind of, my whole family had a crisis of faith. It just happened to coincide with my puberty. And I don't want to get into the details of that whole thing, but basically it was just kind of like up in the air, like, maybe we won't go to church, which was really freaky for me actually to right when I'm supposed to enter the world, kind of notice that my parents were like, maybe this thing our whole lives revolve around like isn't as important. I was also like, I'm supposed to be going to this Mormon college, like, you know, and then the next step is marriage and kids. So it was unnerving, but I for years I would look back, I would deny to my therapist that I had any trauma from being raised Mormon. I was like, no, my parents were so involved, and they were like in a loving way, always reading to us, playing with us, taking us on vacation, you know. They definitely wanted that part of having kids. But what I uncovered with myself is like that actually I encountered this attitude like on an energetic level as soon as I was born, and my body immediately, well, I don't know exactly when, but starting from before I could form memories, I began to dissociate with parts of myself because I knew it did not fit in what a good Mormon girl was supposed to be. Specifically in my sexuality, and then also in my ambition. And also in just like my performer/teacher gifts. So basically I didn't get to meet myself, you know what I mean, consciously, because I was already like very much just trying to be the Molly Mormon. And that this actually, with some other things, like I got such the kitchen sink in some ways, like as for a privileged person, I got a kitchen sink of just like distractions and confusions on the way to knowing myself. And one of them was that I was born with strabismus, which is the medical term for cross eye. And I had surgery for that at 3 years old, which was traumatic to my nervous system, but I didn't know that at the time. So anyway, there were a few ways in which I was my ability to communicate with myself and feel my feelings and then translate those into behaviors was really compromised. So I just referred to my parents, you know what I mean? Just, and really to like kind of all the authority around me. And yeah, so there's a nice soup of like the mask, I guess, that we start to layer on ourselves as children, of just like understanding, you know, how do I fit into peace here? I think, you know, that's what we're all doing. And we're so good at it, you know, when we're little.
You mean, how do I adapt, you mean?
Yeah, basically, like, I think we're our bodies are always seeking this like homeostatic state, you know, the rest state. Mm-hmm, yeah. And it's like, I mean, we're looking for what you could call peace. But what we learn to do is look for the familiar, you know, because it's a form of peace to be exerting minimal energy. And the familiar, that's what we can calculate. So, you know, I was just trying to figure out how to make my home life feel best. That's what everybody's doing. And we're very observant and we're very good at, like, you know, just unconsciously testing and then calculating, you know. So I did. I became kind of like the golden child. I did. I became what we'd call the golden child. And then everything kind of, the wheels kind of fell off when I was around 15, 16. But I stayed Mormon. I stayed in that church basically until I was 21. So I was kind of on the cusp at the time that I met you, Kylie, when I was like 19. I was living in both worlds then, in terms of going to church and experimenting with like partying and sexual touch. And, and then at 21, I shaved my head, pierced my nose, pierced my eyebrow, and came out to my parents as an ex-Mormon.
Wow.
And yeah, what I didn't realize is that, all I was doing with that really was renouncing the vocabulary, but because I hadn't brought that resolution into my body to really let go of the beliefs that it was referring to automatically, I was continuing to use the Mormon logic. And then, so there was a lot of confusion. I had no clarity really in my 20s because I had this like feminist liberated, intellectually justified logic. But then I still was looking to myself constantly to decide, does this make me bad? You know, like, does this make me bad? You know, just ugh, like, so yeah, it was a rude awakening, and it didn't come until after I'd already made some really, you know, big adult level commitments with my life in terms of like getting married and starting a family, that I came to understand, like, oh, I don't even know how to know what I believe. Oh. I'm very good at remembering like what people agree with.
Yeah.
You know?
So is that where self hypnosis comes in? You've mentioned that a couple of times. I've never actually heard that before. I don't know what that term means. And also, you just said so much.
I know.
I feel like I don't want to jump to the next thing like too quickly, but it does sound like, yeah, you were thrown into the ringer, but now you are so aware. And also, I have to say, so articulate also. You're able to talk about your experience so clearly. Like, I feel like I can understand what you went through, and because through just the way that you've talked about your experience. And I don't know. They always, I mean,
spirit.
I would say, I mean, nobody ever likes this, but it does sound like because you went through the hardships that you were forced to have to learn a lot about yourself, because, you know, it's through the shitty things that we become more aware and we learn about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. That's the thing that I'm saying. Like, that's when I feel like when I really took that like understanding into my body, that's when I began to realize like, oh, I'm a free spirit, you know, like, this isn't just like a bumper sticker. You know what I mean? There's a gap between knowing something about yourself and then like understanding it in a way that selects your behavior
Right. Like,
you know, that gives you your feelings. Exactly. Yeah. The biochemical mm-hmm. cocktail of like emotionally understanding something is very mm-hmm. different. That's like what the body needs. So when we talk about self-hypnosis, that's what I mean is, you know, there's a few different ways to use the word hypnosis, but when I say I'm a hypnotist, what I mean is I help you to intentionally get into the hypnotic trance, mm-hmm. which is a natural state of consciousness that you slip in and out of every day anyway, mm-hmm. and to use it for your own conscious purposes. But ultimately, you are always inducing the trance. I'm just spotting you. And okay. so that you can do it independent of me, of course, you know, and that's the practice that I do for myself to stay in the state where, yeah, I feel like I'm speaking truth, you know?
Yeah. It reminds me of kind of like meditation, actually. It's like, yeah. when you do something to like slow down and get yourself into like a centered space, a different level of consciousness. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. So okay. meditation, just quickly, meditation mm-hmm. is a form of hypnosis. So oh. you'd say like all meditation is on the hypnotic spectrum. Not all hypnosis is necessarily meditation, but it's common to say that for the purposes of like a therapeutic hypnosis session, that it's basically meditation with a goal.
Wow, I love that.
Can you actually just say a little bit more? Because one of the questions I wrote down was, what's the deal with hypnosis? Like, I don't know that much about it. And yes. and it seems so beautiful and powerful, especially the way that you write about it and speak about it. So like, yeah, can you just expound a little bit more about?
Yeah. So there are a bunch of different ways to describe it. And the trend right now, obviously, is to talk about like physiologically what it means, because it's a physiologically measurable state of consciousness. It's based on like the speed of cycles in your brain, like how many hertz per second. And then, you know, beyond a certain point, I think it's 9 hertz per second, is where you'd enter a trance-like state. So that helps some people understand. And during the state, you're more suggestible to edit your core beliefs. You're simply just more suggestible. And so I find though that what helps people understand more is, look, everyone thinks in images, okay? Like that's just, there's a, like inner images and outer images. And then we have the imagination that interprets them. And sometimes though, we can think so fast that we don't even see the images. We just kind of get the meta analysis that come as like thought, you know? And sometimes that thought is sometimes that image is so rehearsed, so frequently reviewed that we don't even get the thought. We just get the behavior that it's associated with. Mm-hmm. And so if we take the time to even saying slow down or relax is a little inaccurate, because that's just one approach. You know, you could do this also by like really revving yourself up through like dancing or stuff like that. But if it's more like if we take the intention and just super focus on the intention to connect with what is at the other end of this behavior that we don't want, you know, and to access the image, then there, because it's our own image that we are producing with our imagination, we can change that image. And through changing that image, you change the whole stream leading to your behavior and then mm-hmm. what's coming back to you. So that's the power we have. If we can only just like keep showing up and practicing something that may appear childish or spooky to us, you know, which is a frustration. I mean, it's just, it is what it is, but there's so much research now on the efficacy of this, you know, that, and it's been endorsed by both the American and British Medical Association since like the 19th century, or at least mm-hmm. in Britain it was, to be taught as standard practice for like all physicians. So the outcome is great, but there is the barrier of, well, you have to take the time and you have to learn some skills mm-hmm. and you also have to be willing to witness yourself, you know, and to take responsibility for yourself. That isn't to say like, you know, that you aren't doing those things when you're just like taking a pill or, you know, doing something that's faster, but there is a lot that is in our own control if we can arrange our priorities to make this time for, yeah, just getting aligned with what are we actually imagining, you know? Because as I said, when I first launched the She Shed, you know, one of the missions is I want people to understand their imagination as their immune system.
Oh my gosh. Whoa. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me, actually.
Say more. Yeah.
Yeah. So like one of the resistances, people feel silly, you know, people feel that's the whole woo thing, right? It's like, you know, taking time to like make stuff up, you know, like, and what they don't understand is those are our fangs. Those are our claws. This is the tool of humanity, is that, you know, we have a nervous system that can produce inner projections and can experiment with them and can run through scenarios and can also change the associations we have with images we've been hanging on to. So basically what we have is an inner laboratory, right? Where by conjuring and layering and interacting with symbols, we can give our bodies instructions for what to produce biochemically. It's just like, that's how we fire the order, you know? Mm-hmm. But like I say, it's not necessarily, the start of that process is immediate, but it takes reinforcement to replace one path of thinking with another. And that's the part where, you know, you have to make it fun. You have to make it fun for yourself. You know, it has to be about, I think, your tastes and your fantasies. Otherwise, you're not going to want to sit for 20 minutes or whatever it is that you need. And to like dwell in this other world in order to make it real for yourself. You see what I'm saying? So that's why I'm all about the jokes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. So this makes so much sense to me. I feel like this is the basis of a lot of different kinds of therapy. I mean, it's, and in coaching as well, it's essentially like you use the word images, which I think makes a lot of sense, but in therapy and coaching, it's also just about like looking at what we're thinking and what we're believing. And it's like, what's in the subconscious? Like we got to start there. And I hear you saying like, we just have to, it's repetition almost. Like I heard someone say something once that I thought was so funny, because it's true. It's like, our brains are actually very stupid. Like if you just keep telling your brain the same thing over and over and over again, it's going to believe that. So you just got to choose something that like, whatever it is that you choose to tell yourself over and over again, or whatever image you see over and over again, that is going to create your reality.
For
and
sure.
So you're going down to the basics and being like, let's start. Yeah. Let's like look at the images that we're seeing, which is, and I think people get stuck, like people get stuck on thinking like, if I take an action, I'm going to get a result, action, result, action, result. And then, but that's like a very transactional thing that I think is not, it's great for the short term, but it doesn't equate to like long-term change. I think long-term change is about kind of what you were saying, like, you know, what I call thoughts, but also like an images that happen so quickly that we don't even know that they're happening sometimes. It's like so fast. It's, you know, thought moves at the speed of thought, which is faster than anything else I can, you know, think of. So yeah, it's like, how do we catch that? And then,
well, it's like, yeah, it's like, I think I put this in a post. I can't remember if I did yet, but, it's like flying, you know, flying over your vineyard and being like, oh my God, you know, the grapes are rotting on the vine. They're not, and you can see, you know, you can see it all. But if you want something to actually change, you have to land the plane and you have to walk among these vines and you have to handle these grapes, you know, like you have to take them off and put them in your basket, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's what we're working with when we're trying to teach people how to transition intentionally from the beta brainwave state, which is the one we're basically in now, although I'd say we're in kind of a flow state, but you know, that's the normal, that's the preferred mode of consciousness to operate a complex, fast moving capitalist world, you know, the alert, problem seeking, problem solving, like relatively vigilant state of mind. We want to help people. It's really just, I think, about giving people permission and support to do what they want to do anyway. Like their bodies know what they want to do mm-hmm. in order to get into an alpha brainwave state, you know, which is the most wakeful form of trance, which you can experience when you're driving on the highway, you know, mm-hmm. or watching a show. But to be aware, oh, I'm in this state, I'm extra suggestible. That means I'm not going to let just anybody into my space right now. And also maybe I'm going to do my affirmations right now, you know, or maybe I'm going to like get into a flow with my art right now or play with my child right now, you know, really take advantage of it.
I think one of the things that strikes me about what you're saying is this, that you said we have to be willing to witness ourselves. Right. And I think that ultimately is like a lot of the things that we're running away from, right, mm-hmm. is this idea of having to witness ourselves. But that, at least for me, that's where when I'm able to shed something, it's always because I was really with myself. And there's some dark, scary shit there, right? There's some mm-hmm. stuff that we've been, you know, maybe for many, many years or decades, or, you know, depending on your philosophy, lifetimes that we've been sort of constructing ways to not be present with. And I think this is why I really love what you're saying about also going back to the beginning, like this notion of joy, like what is the version of connecting with this alpha state that is joyful and not operating from a like should standpoint, right? Like I should mm-hmm. meditate. Like nobody mm-hmm. flosses because they should. Like, I mean, maybe some people, maybe some Virgos out there, right. But like, what is the way to connect with whatever it is that's out there that's bigger than us and also totally 100% within us that brings you joy? And is it dance? And is it writing? And is mm-hmm. it driving on the highway, listening to the right kind of music? Like all of those things are so powerful, but like, yeah, like one of the things that comes through when I channel the records sometimes is like, why are you obsessed with work? Like this word work, like this is not supposed to be like this arduous capitalist work. Like this is supposed to be fun and joyful. And like, this is about love. Love is fun. Like it might be hard. It might be scary because we're very vulnerable and we don't have our defense mechanisms, right? It's not that it's easy, but it is also supposed to be full of ease. So I just think that's like so powerful.
Well, this is why I love being Irish, you know, because like I just think the Irish are so good at this. I've learned so much from my family about, you know, like or my family over there, I should say, maybe, but that like, you know, life can be hard, you know, like the wind blows cold, but if you're a good crack, like life is good, you know, if you know how to have a good time, if you know how to whistle a tune, if you know how to make a toast, like people are going to want to be around you. And whenever people are in a group, like by choice, they're going to have a flow state. It's going to be good. You know, you spin around enough times and you know, you're seeing something beautiful. Like, so that gives me a lot of comfort, you know, it's both. It's like, can be a drag and we have to learn how to be bored. That's a huge thing. I'm still working on that. Mm-hmm. Or coming back to that. Cause, as a kid, you know, I think I had more loneliness than I realized at the time, but it really activated my literary imagination. And that's where I went to feel understood. You know, then after I had a baby, I couldn't really refer to that anymore. My daily journaling went out the window and I couldn't read, you know.
Yes. I finally had 10 minutes to journal the other day and I couldn't find my journal anywhere because it's been like, it's dusty in some corner. And I was like, but I have 10. And by the time I finally found it, I literally, no joke, cracked it open, clicked the pen, and then I hear.
No. No, I have to tell you, no joke, you guys, like the motherhood thing scrambled my brain because I was so used to being in charge of directing my own attention. And then I suddenly had like, it felt like no say on it, you know, until I learned to assert otherwise. And during that time, my brain broke. Like, and here's what happened with my journaling. I couldn't journal anymore about like my life, but I started just, I mean, you'll probably relate to this because I imagine this was like channeling for you, Kylie. I would have these thoughts and I'd be like, that thought is worth living for, you know, like that's so beautiful. I have to write it down. And I got to the point where I had journals, but I wouldn't even write chronologically. I just open them to a page and like scrawl something where it fits. So I was like, talk about mad woman in the attic. And then I had a clipboard in every room with like loose paper where I would just, if I ever had 10 seconds, it was like every thought was so important. I had to commemorate the fact that like I finished a sentence in my brain, you know. Yeah. And I'm just pulling out of that now that she's six. I'm like, oh, full thoughts. Woo.
Yeah. Oh, you know? There is so much to talk about, I think, around spirituality and motherhood and the way it breaks your brain. Like, yeah. like that is, it's, but I think it's because, well, I think there's a lot of things there and I could probably talk about it with you and anybody who's interested for like many hours. We've also talked
about doing like a whole podcast on it.
Yeah.
I know that you're so interested in it. And also I'm interested, I'm not a mother, but this is the very thing that honestly scares the living bejesus out of me. So
yeah.
I've talked about to Kylie about being like, let's just do one on motherhood and you can like tell me all the things. So that I don't just have to like,
what would be better is if we do one about motherhood and you say everything you think it'll be and we just laugh.
Well, no, because my problem is I think everything is going to be is I think it's going to be like, honestly, I think it's going to be hell. Like I'm terrified because it feels like it's going to just be the breakdown of all of my control, which, you know, like you heard earlier, my shadow self loves the fucking control. And I know the lesson is everyone who's a mother who's told me like, oh, what you learn is like, you have no control. And I think that's a beautiful lesson, but learning that lesson is not fun.
You know,
but I think you don't have to hold that terror though, because I mean, you're in this chair hosting this podcast. I was not when I got pregnant, you know, I was not asking myself these questions. I was trying to get more control, you know, like I was trying to like put more armor on. And that's why, like when my pregnant belly busted through that armor, it was like so traumatic, you know, it was like the death of so many delusions. And there was a lot to mourn, but you know, like this is why, right, Kylie, like this is why we write about this stuff and talk about this stuff, is so that other women don't have to have these traumatic initiations, you know, because really, I'll tell you what motherhood is like, it's helping someone learn how to be themselves in a non-destructive way, right? So it's a lot of patience, you know, it's a lot of, we have to be the repetition. We have to be the consistency. And we give them our voice, you know, to use until their like mic comes online. And that's the thing that I think, you know, my mother understood that as much as she could, but she had so much unresolved anxiety from her own like lack of a loving mother's voice that it just, you know, she just didn't have a filter as much as I'm sure she now wishes she would have, in terms of like how hard she was on herself. And if she had known that that's exactly what I was like pulling into my body, was like, okay, this is how we look at ourselves and this is what we demand. And, you know, that she would have been sweeter. But you know that now, or, you know, like you have the option, right?
Yeah.
So that's, I think you're, no, you I know also, how to reach out and arrange for your own needs. That's what you show them.
Yeah. I mean, it's a constant ongoing learning. I feel like it's never ending. The depths of which you can learn that is also are just never ending. But yes, I mean, I guess I actually do find that very heartening. So thank you for saying that, because you know, if there is going to be one thing about having a child late, it is that at least there's hopefully anyway, some wisdom there.
I think too, for me, I knew it wouldn't be easy, but I thought I knew the ways it would be hard, and it turned out to be hard in all sorts of different ways. And then a lot of the things that I thought were going to be super hard were totally easy. Like it just like wasn't like, yeah, like,
who cares?
And even like the emotional pieces, like I think I thought I would really have, I'm a really extroverted person, and I thought that I would really have a hard time giving up this sort of like I moved from living in the city for a decade to moving into the suburbs right like a couple months before my son was born. And then it was like winter. And I thought that I would really, really long for the freedom of like late nights out, listening to music, being like riding my bike through the city, doing all these things. And the truth is I loved that phase of my life so deeply. But then I was like, I was just like, I reached a point where I was like ready for the next thing. And it wasn't like, sure, there's parts of me that like loved, but anyway, I'm rambling, but the things that were hard just surprised me, and they were subtle, in some ways subtler and also more potent, and which is a long-winded way of saying, like, you might think, oh, the thought of giving up control is going to be the thing that is, and again, maybe you'll decide not to have kids, but mm-hmm. it just, for the thought experiment, you might think, you know, it's the idea of giving up control that's really scary, and then your kid is born and you're like, oh, I don't give a shit about it. Like, I just, right. like, it's, that's not the thing that's important. But then there'll be some other trauma that's been right. deeply buried that will rear its head. Yeah. Because my theory is that, like, our opportunity, and we talked about this a little bit with Argos on the last podcast, but, like, our opportunity as parents is, like, all of the shit that we have not dealt with and that all of our ancestors behind us have not dealt with, this that we are carrying, we have a chance mm-hmm. to face it and, like, get mm-hmm. really real with it and process it and let go of it. Or we pass it on to our kids and then they get to do it.
Right. Yeah. 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 Oof. You know.
Oof. No pressure. Yeah.
But it's not though, because eventually you figure out, like, oh, all I have to do is sing it some songs. You know? Like.
Yeah. And also, like, they're just so friggin' magical and, like, wise themselves. Like, they don't actually need as much direction as we they need us to, like, love them and, like, put some, like, guardrails up and, you know, keep them from, you know, sticking their fingers in the light socket. That's our current that's our current lesson in this house. But, like, but also, like, my kids are so much smarter than me. Like,
yeah,
they are so much smarter than me, mm-hmm. you know, because they don't have all the crap conditioning, or they don't have as much of it.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. But yeah, what got me was not so much the, like, well, I guess maybe the lack of control thing. Yeah. But also there was stuff I didn't imagine vividly, nor my partner. And I did a good job of, like, picking a guy who, like, we both were like, we're going to have, like, a modern, this is going to be 50-50. We're both going for our dreams, you know. But then what I didn't anticipate is how hard it was to actually stick to that. Like, after, because then when you're tired, you always default to the familiar. And then it was like resentment because, dude, I'm still, like, making all the dinners and you don't even know how to, you know, like, these kind of things coming up. And it's like, meanwhile, we're trying to, like, raise a child and not, you know, slap each other in the face. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's good, you know, you, like, oh, thank God for therapy, you know?
Yes.
Thank God for scheduling. Love
therapy. Amen.
Yes. I'm all about scheduling.
I'm going to therapy later today, guys. This is a real powerhouse self-healing day. Our podcast in therapy.
Yeah.
So, actually,
I have three therapists right now.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
Because I have one for myself, and then I go to couples therapy with both of my partners, different people. So.
Oh my gosh, and we haven't even talked about that yet. But I do have to say, good on you for being able to find, I think, you know, finding a therapist is like dating. You got to, like, move around and find one that you, that really, really like, someone that you respect, someone that, you know, understands. So that's impressive in itself.
Actually, this is my little PSA. Anyone that might be listening who, like, is interested in therapy, Psychology Today has a beautiful database of therapists that you can search, and like dating, they all have profiles. They talk about their specialties and their backgrounds. I have found great therapists that way. My loved ones have. So if you're interested in therapy, I think that first step can be kind of the hardest. So that's my little PSA. So go check out.
Yeah.
And mine is, don't wait until you have a crisis.
Yes,
you know, understand you have things you want to accomplish in your life. You know, invest as soon as you can, invest in finding that person, and then help it, like, letting them help you articulate, what are those things I want to accomplish, and use it for that, you know, because, like, the crisis will come up, but then you'll just want to be in your bed with the ding dongs, you know, you won't want to be Googling therapists. So,
oh my God, that's so true. I'm so glad that you said that. Do you guys know who Esther Perel is? She's like, she's also a therapist. She was just saying that, like, now these days, a lot of couples are coming in, not as, you know, emergency sessions. It's more like
prophylactic.
And there's less of a stigma about it. And I'm all like, anybody who's going to listen to my problems, yes, I will go to you.
I am a champion of a healing-based economy. I think that's what we're moving toward. I think everybody is silly for not just, like, saying that directly and being like, okay, we're going to take a break on the plastic for a bit and just all trade the digits around with, like, holding space with each other's shit, you know?
Oh, I love that. And I think that we're right. We're moving in that direction, but I still also think we've got a ways to go, but we are moving in that direction for sure. I think so. especially like our generation, younger generations, it's just being built into the fabric, I think.
Yeah.
But kind of like you were saying also, there's always resistance. Sometimes people don't want to sit in the shit. And then, we make it fun and we make it like inspiring and we make it heartening and all those things. But there's innate resistance. So
that's like why I try to use my imagination to come up with events that I would want to go to. Cause I think, you know, 9 times out of 10, just want to stay at home, you know, and like do my doodles. Well, yeah. So, you know, I'm like, well, we'll do a clothing swap where you get to share your story about like what item you're letting go of, you know, or we'll do something where it's a workshop to actually tell this story as a bit of stand-up comedy, you know, and let yourself act out and get a fucking applause for it, you know, like turn it into something that makes you proud of yourself.
The workshop I did called Releasing Shame, surprisingly not that many people wanted to show up for it.
Well, yeah, that's
like, oops.
Yeah,
marketing,
that's a Brene Brown problem, right? She was like, oh, I talk about shame and people are all like,
and I'm just like such a dork. I like forget that, like, you know, maybe not everyone wants to just like dive into the deep end of I wanted to, if we can make a little bit of a pivot, although it's all related, you've mentioned a couple times your Instagram feed, and I I love everything that you post, and in particular I just think that you, this is very thought-provoking, and I just, there's one that you wrote recently that I wanted to just like read a little snippet of and then dig in on a little bit more, because I have been thinking about it since I read it. So we'll post this in the show notes, but Zaylee's Instagram is she.shed.hypno. And you wrote recently, when we think of trauma, we tend to think of brokenness, of violence, of tragedy. This is your reminder that way more often trauma is the result of unintended interference with natural development. And once the trauma is addressed, development can resume and complete to its loveliest potential. No, quote, permanent damage. Dig it, quote, delays are a part of nature. I put delays in quotes because that word usually holds the idea that during this time, nothing is happening, or during this period, time is being wasted. And when I really examine this idea in lived reality, I find it doesn't hold up. What I find is that nature just likes to stagger herself. Nature likes pattern and symmetry, but she also loves an accent piece. And then you go on, because you write long, beautiful posts, but that resonated with me so much that you know, I'm totally that person who like wants to be productive all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And feels like even like, I don't know how to exactly articulate it, but I find like when I have my 5 minutes of downtime, feeling like I have to use it productively, right? And that like in even when I'm thinking about healing, like what is the thing I'm going to do today about healing, whatever healing means that day. And there just was something really powerful about being reminded, like progress, like there's nothing linear about this, and that like it's actually very natural not just to have cycles, which I think we think about a lot of like seasons, but also just like pause, staggering and stopping, like all of that is actually just fucking the way it's supposed to be, and chill out. I don't know, I just wanted to speak more about that, that idea.
Well, I hope that all of my posts are, you know, I'm a really big believer, and I'm here to help you just like celebrate what it is that you believe, you know, and understanding that even that part of you evolves, you know, cause it's all dynamic. But what I find most useful, and so that's what I offer to people, is like, I identify as nature, you know, I look for the commonalities between myself and what I see in the other species around me, like in my cousin creations, which as I say that, I'm like, oh, I've said too much, you know, but that's how I was born, you know, and like, that's what gives me the butterflies in my tummy that says, yeah, I like being here. I like being alive. So I'm going to believe whatever the fuck I want in order to get that feeling, you know? And that's breaking the stigma of the crazy lady, you know, is like, oh, we're enjoying ourselves too much over here. We're going to start, you know, our own government or something. But it really is just like, look at yourself as nature. That's where, for me, I find compassion. And I see like, when I look at plants, I'm like, yeah, they're, you know, related, but they're kind of doing their own thing. And then like the whole before a bud comes out, it's just a stick, you know, and then something spirals, something delicate, these leaves spiral consistently enough to cut through this wood and come out and flower. So if a stick can do, like if a tree can do that, why not me? You know, that's how I invite people to think of things, I suppose. And in there with the delays, it's like, you know, imagine if all the flowers bloomed at one, the exact same day on a tree, and you'd have a one day spring. So this idea allowed me to release the anger, which was really what was getting in the way of like me and my healing, like getting to the tipping point where it really like picks up its own momentum. Because I felt like, you know, that thing we all get, which is this shouldn't have happened, you know, as if we aren't here for an adventure. And yeah, to just embrace like, okay, this is my adventure, you know, is there are some things that they just didn't get what they needed, you know, in order to flourish yet. And so now that I'm aware of it, I'm encountering embarrassment, you know, especially maybe if I was pretending like those things were already online. But now that I've like learned how to calm myself down from my own embarrassment about not being a finished perfect product, you know, I can look at the story that got me here and go, oh, you know, that was a wild fucking ride. And now I see like how I got to this place. And from here now, I'm going to start to choose to try the things that I really want to try or to enjoy the things that I'm really drawn to. And so, yeah, that's when I started to feel like, oh, this is what people are always talking about. This is what all the, you know, the poems and the mystical stories, you know, the scriptures too, is just like this becoming aware of really the options I have in loving myself and in loving creation, if you will.
We're both silent. There's no follow-up to that. I mean,
Rumi would be proud of me.
I know. You're kind of blowing my mind right now. And I just love the way that you're able to so effortlessly speak to these things. That's kind of an aside, but.
Well, thank you. I've been self-obsessed for years.
So. I don't know. I've been self-obsessed for years too. And I feel like I still got to figure out what I'm thinking and saying half the time. So.
Well, thanks. It's really, you know, I love having these conversations and I love other people sharing with me their versions, because we recognize that emotional release, you know, it's contagious. It's contagious the same way that narcissism is contagious, you know, where shame spreads, you know, like the release of shame also spreads. So
yeah. Good begets good. Love begets love, but also fear begets more fear.
Yeah.
So, and yes, I also just feel, I mean, I love what you said about nature as, a model. Cause I mean, yeah, we are a part of nature, and that's exactly how I feel every time I get into nature. I'm just like, the trees just are, the plants just be, the bugs are just, the ants are just working without any story about work. They're not going, oh, I'm working so hard and I hate work. They just are. And sometimes, and I go into nature, I'm like, no shade as in there's no judgment. No one here is judging me. I can just be exactly as I am. Yeah, I think that's why I've filled my meditation space with plants, because one, I do believe that, like, you know, I'm like, my goal is like, if I can get into like a deep enough state, eventually I'm going to hear them talk to me.
Yes.
But also,
you can start the conversation with your imagination.
Well, I'm always like, hey, plants, you know, I talk to them pretty regularly. But just this idea,
I saw
of, like,
a shaman, by the way, who was like talking about how the plants suit her. And I said something about like, I forget what, but I said something about some flowers and she got so excited. I was like, did you hear them? Did they talk to you? And I was like, no, I'm so sad, but maybe one day.
Yeah. I've heard that plants are the most benevolent, as in they're just happy to be here. And they are like, I feel really honestly comforted around plants, because I really don't feel like there's any judgment. And it's like, you know, you put them in a place where they may not have enough sun, and they just reach for more sun. Like, there's, it's just, Yeah. They just do it their thing naturally. Without...
Well, I've never seen any evidence that plants aren't also consenting to be here in this world as it is. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-mm. Like, what do you mean?
Well, we're, there's a lot of like, man, this is probably going too far. But what I'll say is like,
go far.
Okay, so one of my gifts is really like attuning to the consciousness of plants. You know, yes. Like I'm what they call a smoky woman, where my family comes from, meaning like, you know, I hang out with the plants and I am not a botanist. Like, again, with the labels, it's not that but it's more of an emotional register. And like, you know, plants, this is what I want to say. And then you can take this into your meditation and for what, you know, whatever you want directly. But, I see plants as our closest relatives, not mm-hmm. chimpanzees, mm-hmm. because they're turning into each other all the time. You know, I'm taking plants in every day, you know, and mm-hmm. and they are becoming me. So I looked, you know, instead of looking to like other, primates for what I can learn about my limitations or my tendencies, I look to plants and go like, what can I learn from them? Cause you know, they got the good ideas and that's like that's the material I'm actually working with. You know, even if I'm eating meat, like we're on a cycle of engagement here. So, I have huge respect for plants. I have a huge natural tendency to sing to them, as does my daughter, you know? And I think that what's happening there is that like, we're kind of being the mouthpiece, we're being the flute, you know, where we're picking up on like an emotional vibe. It's, you know, we're just like picking up on it, literally a vibration, you know, a melody that wants to be experienced in that moment. And it's like, what is the moment made of but you know, a human admiring plants? Like that's what the song is the love song, you know, between these two cousins, if you like.
You're actually not the first person. I love plants and I'm still an amateur, you know, plant lady, but I just love hearing people talk about plants. And I think you're not alone in this. There's a lot of people who mm-hmm. talk about feeling a close connection with plants, communicating with plants. There's a lot of stories of, or even in their studies, you know, like just plants being a form of higher intelligence.
Right.
And I recently donated to a Kickstarter called Plant Wave, where what they do is they hook up some type of machinery to different plants and take those mm-hmm. vibrations, or I'm not even sure how it works, but to make music. And so essentially they're creating like a whole, they're making music based off what they think the plants are saying. And yeah, I donated money because I would get a CD to be like, what are these plants like? And they're going to make it into an app that you can like eventually take with you to be like, oh, let's listen to what this plant sounds like. And I'm like,
that combines
like my, you know, my love of music, which, you know, and also my love of plants. I'm just like, this is so cool.
Wow. Yeah. Just check in with your stomach for permission first. Cause I bet some plants would be annoyed by that.
Oh my God. That's so true. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. No,
I don't
know.
They're like, leave me alone. Well, I don't know. I guess I think plants are all benevolent, but anyway, Plant Wave for anybody interested in music, plant life. That's another thing you can
have fun with.
What's
interesting too, as we're having this conversation is I'm not a plant person, but I had a total realization just as you guys were geeking out about your love of plants that that is totally because I am afraid that I will let them down, which is a fear that I have in a lot of interpersonal relationships, right? Like I won't be enough for the people in my life. And so I do this thing where like, God bless all my friends. I just like disappear from texting for like 2 weeks and I reemerge. They're like, cool. Thanks. Glad to have you back. But yeah, so anyways, I just totally am going to sit with that for a minute. But part of my resistance to like super loving plants is like, I will fuck this up and I will kill you. And I am a bad person.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I think the reason I first got into plants was because someone told me that plants were benevolent and kind. And I was like, so I was like, well, then that means they want, you know, like, let me see. I don't know. It's almost like, as long as I'm trying, they're not going to like hate me. And I'm just like, let me just talk to this plant. Be like, let me just try and do my best. And who knows? I've killed many plants actually, but mm-hmm. it was my belief in the fact that they are a loving source and not, you know, a hating source or a judging source that allowed me to even begin a connection. Right. Because I think you're totally right. A lot of people feel that way. They're like, oh, well, if I'm going to fuck it up, then I'm not going to
I can feel something unlocking for me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did that just screw you guys up? Somehow this thing, my iPad rang.
No. You didn't hear anything?
Mm-mm. Okay. Damn it.
We actually should.
Yeah, I know. We gotta wrap it up. I don't want to because, okay, I just have to say something really quick. For anybody who noticed earlier, Zaylee dropped the fact that she had two partners. My ears definitely perked up when she mentioned that. I just want to say, and in case anyone else is listening, because I hate when I'm on a podcast and something comes up and the host doesn't like ask the question. So I just want to say, we just talked already and we already said that we would love to have Zaylee back for another episode and hopefully many episodes to come. So for anyone curious about that, know that we can talk about that next time and that there will probably be, we could have a million questions conversations because there are a million questions that I still want to ask.
Yeah. Who knows how many partners I'll have next time.
Yes.
And by then Eva will be able to transcribe what the plants are saying. Yeah. And yeah. Oh my gosh. This is just beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. Do you have anything that you want to plug?
Yeah.
I would love everyone. The best way to get more of my thoughts or to tell me yours is to find me on Instagram. So that's at she.shed.hypno. And you'll see that's what she shed there. So please subscribe to that and get alerts if you want to be like really involved and say hi. Tell me that you found me through the podcast. And then I'm also sending out a monthly newsletter, and I don't like a lot of emails, so I'm pretty minimalist with this kind of stuff. But it's going to be probably posts that are a little too intimate for me to want, like, put on the, you know, just online, the public facing account. And then a few things that I just loved that help people understand hypno, you know, like what I call the love dump, like songs or whatever. And this month I'm going to be sending out also a free guided session. That's called Mind Over Mood. So if you want to get that one, just subscribe by the end of November. You can do that.
The link in this podcast actually probably isn't going to be broadcast until next year sometime. So,
Well, anyway, then it'll probably still be available. So just go tinyletter.com/sheshed, or you can also find the link to my newsletter on my Instagram link and on my website, which is shesheshedhypno.com.
Awesome. Woohoo.
Thanks.
Yay. Okay.
So we like to end every podcast with the question. What is something bringing you joy right now in your life?
Well, actually the first thing I thought of was Instagram, because for someone who's been like really judgy about social networking and what it does to the brain, and those are all real concerns, like I find so much joy in just interacting with people on there and the beautiful colors, you know, that it brings into my life. And also just like I'm doing deep relaxation for this holiday season without travel and without commitments. So,
oh my God, yes.
I feel like I'm sliding years into my life already, like between the cells. So I highly recommend if your body's asking for that to figure out how to arrange it.
I love that because I feel like that's almost radical. Like this time of year, it's the holidays right now when we're recording and most people are like busy, busy, busy and obligation and thing. And like, just be like, no, that's not to be like, fuck it. I'm going to listen to my body and do what I want to do is revolutionary. And I think a lot of people could follow in that path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say it's radical too. It's like, a radically different way of celebrating, but it feels like a celebration in my house.
Yeah.
For me.
Okay.
Well, actually that's my answer too, because, in 2 days, mm-hmm. my family is getting on a plane and we are spending the week of Thanksgiving away, just the four of us. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait. And it's so funny because it felt like a necessity, right? Like my husband and I have been talking, like, should we go on vacation? When should we go? What should we do? And, you know, between having two little kids and both working full time, and also just like, I don't know, it's a period of life where we're both sort of processing things, right? So I just was like, this is a necessity. We need to just like escape from the laundry and the people who we love, but are like also can be kind of a distraction, right? So you're busy, busy, busy all the time. And so we're escaping to the desert for a week and I can't wait. And bonus, Eve and I are going to meet in person for the first time.
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
Well, really?
Yes.
Yeah. That was so amazing.
Because I'm escaping from everybody in my life except for you.
Yes, and I'll take it. I feel honored. Yeah, we're going to meet in the desert. It's going to be honestly fucking awesome. And I'm going to meet your family and yeah, we're going to like take pictures. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like it's not totally in line with my spiritual beliefs to say that what's bringing me joy is something in the future, but.
But your funny body doesn't know the difference if you're imagining it vividly.
There so we go. There we go. Yeah. But also I think I'm especially excited about, so this is actually also about the present, is like time outside, right? To go with our theme of nature, like time outside, even like it's getting much colder here now. And I have like a 20-minute walk when I get off the train to go to my office each day. And usually I dread it, that starts to get cold, but I'm just trying to like lean into it. And it feels so invigorating. And like this morning when my toddler like really just needed to burn off some energy, I was like, just let's put on the coat and go for a walk outside. And so similarly, I just can't wait to go like climb some rocks and be in the desert. So
yes,
being outside.
Yes. Okay. And so for me, my happy thing for this week is I actually saw this on Instagram, someone that I follow, I can't remember her name. Oh, I think it's like Mosaic Eye or something. She had this little chart about things that she does every day to like bring herself joy. And one of them was like dancing in the living room as a form of self-care. And so I, you know, generally will organically sort of break out into dance sometimes, or if I'm listening to a song, but to think about like, oh, let me make this a part of my day for my mental health. I've been doing that more recently and it really works, whatever that means. Like, cause I work from home, so I'm oftentimes at my desk, you know, in my apartment, and like, yes, I'm able to like, I live across from a park, so I get out every day, but sometimes I just need to get up and shake around and get the fuck out of my head with some project that I'm working on. And it's just like, it is such an energy picker upper, and it just like, you know, resets me and it makes me feel alive, and I get to connect with music and I just get to act a fool in my living room with no one watching, and it is like completely liberating. So if you ever need a midday pick me up, I mean, I feel like this is something I thought about this. They should integrate this into offices. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, forget meditation rooms. Like yeah, actually just have like a dance party room.
Yeah. Just like, and everyone gets to pick like a song and then you just come in and dance.
Yeah.
It's fucking awesome. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Perk of having a toddler is also that like dance parties are just the norm. The It's funny as you're talking, I was like, oh my God, I forgot to even, that's just like such a joyful part of every day is like we put on, you know, Disney show tones or David Bowie. Those are his two favorites lately.
Ooh, good taste.
And we just like rock out. And there will be times where, yeah, I'm like feeling totally like mopey and whatever I'm in. And then you just can't stay that mopey when you're like spinning around to Ain't Never Had a Friend Like Me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the big utilities of your body, you know, dancing, like shifting you out of states of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't access it enough. I wish I accessed it all the time. So it's a good reminder.
Yeah.
Okay, y'all. So for anybody who wants to follow me on the gram, I'm at Bad Bitch Living. And you can also find out more about me at my website, evaliao.com. I'm running a meditation program right now. It's a short 4-week one-on-one meditation program. You get a lot of hands-on support. It's about meditation, but it's also all about the work that we do in our 4 coaching sessions, where we're going to work through some type of stressor that you have right now. And then using what you learn in meditation, the insight that you gain, the stillness that you're, will, you know, over time cultivate to, as a tool to get you through some of the challenges in your life. So that's what I got going for me. And what about you, Kylie?
Do it. So you can follow me at _AkashicGrace. I didn't know about the underscore, forgot about it. Eva reminded me. and then my website is akashicgrace.org. akashicgrace.com is another beautiful Akashic Records reader whose name is actually Grace. Everyone thinks my name is Grace now. I didn't think of that.
So funny.
So, you know, I do Akashic Records readings. I don't channel, like I don't like pick a time and channel live. I actually do it like you send me your questions and I can do an audio recording or I can write it for you. So you have it to reference on your own time and can repeat reference. I've had a couple of people be like, I don't understand. There's no calendar. So sorry, my website's confusing. And then you can also sign up for my mailing list because once a month I send out just like a monthly reading for, I open the records of the newsletter subscribers and send out a reading. And I just really love doing that. It's always a really, really beautiful message that comes through. So if any of that is of interest to you, find me there.
And that's it. That's all she wrote.
Woo! Oh, and subscribe, rate, review. It really helps. It makes a big difference. And if you have someone that you think would love learning more about the beautiful Zaylee Kane, please send them this podcast.
Yes. All right. Zaylee, thank you so much. You were so fucking fun to talk to. And I look forward to talking again, truly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would love to. I'm going to look for that email.
All right. Perfect. Great. Okay.
Thanks, y'all.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.